Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time we're talking about the wider housing market and that controversial tax, stamp duty. The focus of this episode is stamp duty and why it's more than a property tax. I'm pleased to say that we're joined by Shadow Chancellor Mel Stride, who's quoted as saying that this is a tax on personal freedom and progression, which needs to be abolished now. This is the reason why Sir Mel Stride is spearheading the Conservative Party's campaign to get rid of stamp duty, which he argues is a major disincentive to moving home. The current system punishes people who want to buy their first home, growing families who need more space, people who would like to relocate for better jobs elsewhere, and also those who are longing to downsize. This is a controversial campaign because stamp duty raises so much money. In the last tax year, it pulled in about $15 billion. By 2029-2030, that's forecast to rise to as much as $26.5 billion. With me to talk about this topic is Dominic Agace, Chief Executive of Winkworth, and Mel Stride, MP for Central Devon and Shadow Chancellor. Welcome to you both. Now, first to you, Dominic. What's your stance on stamp duty? Do you think it's a tax we could do without? Should it be replaced or just reduced?
So I think it's been pretty devastating for transactions in the property market and therefore the health of the property market. It sort of affects all elements. To have a healthy property market, you need people, first-time buyers coming on and moving up the ladder and those in the larger houses, empty nesters, should we say, downsizing. And effectively, stamp duty stops first-time buyers getting on the ladder because they can't afford to save that as well as paying rents. And it stops downsizers downsizing because they don't want to pay the money that could either be passed down or help fund their retirement in tax. So they stay in houses ill-suited to them. So it creates blockages throughout it with, I believe, societal and economic effects.
Where is the hit from stamp duty worst felt? Is that in London?
I think ultimately it's London. I think it's deeply unfair in some southeast, particularly because, you know, the prices are different, but there are larger, you know, they're not owned, no mortgages. You know, a sort of 2-3 bedroom house in London may well be £1 million in most parts of it, and that person may have, you know, 75% of that £1 million maybe debt. You know, so that doesn't make them extremely wealthy people. But to buy that house to fit the have the space for their kids to fit in or their kid and still be able to get to work at the hours they need to work may cost them huge amounts in taxation. So I feel it's unfair, whereas the same house in another location may well be, you know, £350,000. It provides the same living accommodation for a family, but it is taxed at a far lower rate.
That's a really interesting point you make there. It's the north-south divide. Bills are so much smaller in the north.
Yes, I mean, there is a cost of, you know, it is a problem for London's attraction. And we need to continue to make London an attractive international centre. And I think some of these things work against it because they are, you know, taxations that are encouraging people to get young talent to go elsewhere where they can go and get their foot on the ladder without perhaps paying the taxation they would have to in buying their first property in London, which, you know, is often £400,000-£500,000.
Not so long ago, stamp duty used to be seen as the price of admission to the place where you wanted to live, and you would pay it though you grumbled as you paid it. When did that change? When did it become a reason not to move?
I think when growth stopped in the property market, then you know these taxes are looked on much more closely. You know, when things are moving up at 10, 15% a year, then clearly there's a price of admission and the property prices are growing, and that is offsetting taxation by taking that step quicker. When that stops, then it stops, and it's very hard to start again that transactional process if there's no growth, because those taxations become blocks to it. So when did it start? I mean, ultimately, the transactions were running in London, when I say London, the M25, at around 120 odd thousand, 30,000 until 2014. Last year, they're around 72,000 transactions. So I think you can see what's knocked it. Can't blame it all on one thing, but clearly that has a big effect when every time you have to move. And what's happened is now that if you used to move house, and then you live in your house for the 5-6 years that it fit your purpose for life, and then you try and move to your next house. In that 5-6 years, you'd be paying down your mortgage, and that money would give you a bit of a bigger stake to enable you to take the mortgage out and buy your next house. Now that money you put aside into your equity is now taken out by stamp duty, and therefore you just have to take on a bigger debt to get into the next house that suits your lifestyle. So what suits your way of life, being kids or whatever that may be. So it's a problem around, and therefore people are skipping moving or staying in things they don't suit them for way longer.
So not just a property tax, a tax that's slowing down the whole of the economy.
I think so. I mean, obviously, I'm not a global economist or UK economist, but from what I see, it just means that people are living in properties that aren't making them happy, you know. And that's, yeah, both sides of it. That's young families squeezed into properties that don't fit them, and their kids don't have the space to play. And then the sort of at the end of it means, you know, empty houses with people paying, you know, bills they can't quite afford. They're living in one room, or, you know, they're sort of caught there because they're terrified of paying the money away that they want for their pension.
Obviously, this is something that needs addressing, and I'm going to turn to you, Shadow Chancellor, and ask you more about your policy to abolish stamp duty. What's driving it?
Well, look, what we know is that all governments have to raise taxes. We also know that all taxes in one form or another do some kind of economic damage, okay? But the ones that do the most economic damage are typically transaction-based taxes, so taxes that slow down transactions, and that's precisely what stamp duty is. So what it's doing is bunging up the housing market. And that, of course, has all the kind of social consequences that Dominic has outlined in terms of younger people not being able to get on the housing ladder so easily because they've got to find a lump sum that's to do with or driven by stamp duty. It also means that economically people are less likely to be able to move from where they are to where work is, for example, so it has impacts in the labour market. And it also means that downsizing is less likely to occur, so people with children have left home actually selling that property and freeing up supply within the market for that reason. And it also has an impact on new builds because it makes the housing market less attractive to actually enter. And if you add all those things up, you end up with a tax which is really doing economic damage. And the Institute for Fiscal Studies actually says that it is the most economically damaging tax that there is. And that's why, to your question about our policy, we will abolish stamp duty altogether for primary residences in this country.
Now, that's a very, very big policy. When did you first start to sense that that was needed?
Well, I've always been interested in tax. I was the tax minister when we were in government for 3 years in the Treasury. So I was responsible for domestic and corporate taxes in the UK and got to understand a lot about them and their various characteristics. And I had always identified early on personally that this was one of those taxes that if you were going to really start to get taxes down, this is one of the early ones that you would go for. As you said in your opening introduction there, of course, it comes with a price tag. And as a responsible a government in waiting, we had to explain exactly how we would fund that tax cut. So we also set out at the same time reductions in public spending, particularly around the welfare bill, getting people off benefits and into work as a way of funding that important tax cut.
Can you give us a bit more detail about exactly how you'd raise enough money to replace the vast haul that is now coming in from stamp duty?
Yes. OK. So basically, I set out in the autumn of last year £47 billion worth of savings in a year, each year. And that comes, £23 billion of those savings is from welfare. And that's particularly reducing the number of people going to long-term sickness and disability benefits, particularly in the area of mild mental health conditions, anxiety, ADSD, and so on. So big savings there. We would slim down the size of the civil service back to where it was in 2016. That's a 25% reduction. And we would also be cutting the overseas aid budget, amongst other measures. And those all total up to £47 billion. The measure on stamp duty comes in at £9 billion as a cost. So there was plenty of headroom around that.
Plenty of headroom, but I wonder whether you would also perhaps need a mansion tax to plug some of the hole?
Well, I think you're then getting into the area of people's domestic rates and what kind of approach one might take to that. My party doesn't believe in levying additional charges on other properties. We think that it, once again, it's leaning into those issues around gumming up the market and damaging the property market, when in fact, for all the reasons I've set out, we want to free up that market and make sure that it's moving and that it's flexible.
I think there are two things the property market. I mean, one is building more houses, obviously, and to do that, you need demand and you need liquidity. And if you don't have transactions because no one can afford to move because of stamp duty, then how do you get the house builders to build the properties that need to be built? Which is one half of the equation, alongside planning being the other. And then there's a massive win, which is fitting the housing stock we have to the people, correctly, which is not what is allowed by stamp duty. So by getting everyone in the house they should be and houses developed that need to be developed, then you would make more of the existing housing stock and take the pressure off new build having to build so many houses.
Yeah. There's one other thing I should add, which, of course, is every time there's a property transaction and somebody moves into a new home, there's a lot of economic activity locally around that move. And that will be the estate agent, the removals company, the people that furnish the new property, and the plumbers and the decorators and the electricians and so on that often get involved with a property move. So there's a lot of second order economic activity that occurs when people move home.
I'd like to drill down a bit more into the detail of how this would work. Would you still be exempt from stamp duty if you were buying a buy-to-let or a second home?
Not a second home, not if you're an overseas purchaser, not if you're purchasing a property through a company. So this is for primary residences. So it's somebody who's buying that home that is their one and only home, if you like.
Now, if I were controversial, I'd say that this would be a tax cut for the hugely affluent.
Well, I don't accept that, because this tax has an implication for supply and for the ability to people to move at every level of price across the market. It is true that, of course, stamp duty does disproportionately impact properties in London and the South East, because they tend to be of higher value than or price than those elsewhere. But something over half of all the stamp duty that is paid, or the people paying, are paying on a purchase that's under £500,000. And secondly, the majority of people falling due to stamp duty don't live in London, for example. There are plenty of people living in other parts of the country that are impacted by this too.
Over to you, Dominic, on this one. Is this the first thing you hear when you talk to somebody about possibly putting their house on the market?
Yeah, I think people are still genuinely shocked when they see what the stamp duty bill is. I think they kind of know it's big, and no one quite does the calculations. And then they come to buy a property and they use their stamp duty calculation and go, crikey, I need to stay in my place for another 5 years. But I think it is a huge amount, and it's very hard to justify when... I moved house recently, and you think, well, that's savings that I was putting aside for, kids and maybe one day for school fees for them, and they're just going to be wiped out by paying that and stamp duty to get to the house I want to get to. So and then you start again. So I think it's I was speaking to one of our agents, and he was saying, he remembers the 1% stamp duty days, and people just moved where they wanted to move when they wanted to move. There was no, there was complete fluidity in the marketplace, and therefore everyone was in making the most of it and living where they want to live.
So truly we can advance the argument that this is a tax on progression.
I think it just keeps everyone, yeah, it just keeps everyone stuck. Everyone's a bit stuck, which is, you know, life is only so long, and it's being stuck is awful, especially at the wrong times where you really need to move. You know, having young babies and being stuck in flats too small for you is a struggle.
Yes, in essence, I would say it damages aspiration and it damages the economy. Yeah.
When you speak to people in your constituency, Mel, do the people who'd like to downsize feel particularly sore about this?
Yeah, well, I've got a constituency with an older demographic, so you typically do have people that are in that category of children having left and they're in a larger house and they go through this thinking process about, should I downsize, which will be much easier for me in many ways, and then they think, why do I want to pay huge amounts of stamp duty in order to do that? And so some of them will therefore be reticent to do so. And that means there's less supply in the market, ultimately. The housing stock is being used in an inefficient way. When I speak to people on the doorstep, they're very aware of stamp duty and they're aware of the consequences of it.
Now, I want to ask you about something that's been in the news lately, a rent freeze.
Hmm.
The current government is talking about a rent freeze. Do you think that would ever work?
It's utter disaster. The mere fact that they're talking about it now is going to have probably the consequence of a lot of landlords running out and putting up rents in the very short term, the very near term, because they're fearful that they're going to have a rent freeze, you know, in the not too distant future. So it has that kind of impact, which is very negative. I think, you know, why has this been speculated about? I think there may be some politics in this. It may be that Keir Starmer's in a position where he's feeling very vulnerable. It is the left of his party that is poised to strike. And what better red meat for the left of the Labour Party than saying that you're going to go out and start controlling rents in that way? I mean, as to that as a policy, I think it's pretty disastrous wherever it's tried, because once again, to this argument about supply and demand, it chokes off supply. It makes the attractiveness of becoming a landlord and being in the market far less attractive. It means that landlords don't invest in the properties that they own because they're not getting higher rents, and therefore they become quite dilapidated and so on and so forth. It's a disincentive for those that are occupying those properties to actually move around, because if you're in a situation where your rent is very low relative to all the other options, you tend to stay put. You know, it's just a really, really bad idea.
Also, I think, I mean, from our point of view, language really matters. So, I mean, these sort of leaks, I mean, the property market is so sentiment affected and news flow has such a big impact on it. You know, there's a certain element of the paranoia amongst landlords that they're being pursued. And I don't think necessarily that's borne out by all the legislation, but that's definitely, you know, what can be perceived by groups of landlords, that this kind of they're no longer wanted. And I think you can bring in regulation, but bring it in with the right language and people are far happier to continue. You know, it takes away people leaving unnecessarily. And as you say, you know, if you're sort of muting rent controls and they may never come to pass, and they may, you know, then, but you've caused damage just by doing that. You sort of, the perception is that your direction of travel is negative for a landlord. So therefore, if people don't want you there, then the landlord would think, well, I best go somewhere else before that happens.
So the consequence of this could be we are left with the kind of people who should never be allowed to be a landlord.
Well, I think some of the consequences are just have less. I mean, when I moved to London, I rented and I got into a rental flat with a couple of mates and had a great time in a nice neighbourhood as I could afford, and spent all my disposable cash in, you know, cafes or pubs, and you know, that was fun. And now, you know, the shift is to build to rent, and they won't be, you know, they will be in places where land is cheaper. So, there's a lot of, on a pure young excitement of a city perspective, you know, there's a lot to be lost by losing these individual buy-to-let landlords, and I think that is damaging to the vibrancy of London.
It's this idea of going out there and flying kites, as the Treasury puts it, you know, getting something out of the press just to test what the reaction is, does have, as Dominic is pointing out, real world consequences. And the suggestion of a rent freeze would potentially have the consequences I've just set out. But you look at the run-up to the autumn budget of last year, there were so many potential taxes on this, taxes on that, taxes on that. What it did was it destroyed sort of confidence in the business community and had a real impact on economic growth. And that's what, you know, the IMF and others and the OBR and others have pointed out, that you've got to be very careful when you start speculating about what you might do in the future. Much better to do the hard work, get a serious, robust plan together and then come out and talk about it rather than start flying kites as to what you might do.
Now, to launch this campaign, you had a really cute viral video campaign with Kemi Badenoch as an estate agent. She really, really fit in. Really,
she did it really well, didn't she, actually?
As to the manner born in a very nice estate agency branch.
Yes.
With Cleverly as her
Kemi and Co.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you were to think about a great advertising slogan for getting rid of stamp duty, what would you say? Is it a fixer-upper campaign? What would it be? What would your big slogan be that encapsulates your campaign?
God, that's a question. What would I say?
The foundation of a better economy.
Yeah, maybe. Or opening doors for a stronger economy.
Opening doors for a stronger economy
or for greater opportunity. I might have opening doors in it.
Opening doors. We need the door thing.
Yeah, that's a very positive image, isn't it?
Opening doors for a better economy. Yeah, yeah, I can see the. I can that see it now. Yeah.
Moving on up.
Moving on up.
You've got the music. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Really good. Now, I think that's probably all about it. Thank you so much, Mel Stride, for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange.
Pleasure.
Do join us next time for part two of our conversation with the Shadow Chancellor, when we'll be looking at what he believes needs to be done to fix the housing market.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox, and the editor was Marion Hardman.